President to the American Hospital Association Convention at Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 16 September 1952.
It's my very great privilege today to introduce the principal speaker at this luncheon. We in Philadelphia, as you in the audience, are acutely aware of the vital importance of the health problems of this nation. I think it's fair to say that except for the international situation, there is no more serious problem confronting the United States of America today than its health problem. Our distinguished speaker, in my judgment, has done more during his public life to awaken the conscience of the American people to the health needs of this nation than any other living individual. It is therefore with honor and with the greatest respect that I give you the President of the United States.
Ladies and gentlemen, as I sat down here a while ago, your president gave me a preliminary job to perform for this association. Dr. Rourke, if you'll come forward with the document, I'll be glad to present it. Federal Hospital Management Improvements. The Federal Hospital Executives assembled at the sixth annual luncheon in Philadelphia hereby award to Fred A. McNamara, stand up, a certificate of appreciation for his significant contribution in providing means for the exchange of ideas between federal hospital administrators, for his cheerful and effective leadership directed toward creating a greater feeling of unity among federal hospital administrators, and for his vision, understanding, and encouragement directed toward management improvement in setting up the federal interagency institutes for hospital in organizing and conducting the federal hospital luncheons in the Hospital Association Convention, and his assistance in securing recognition for federal hospital administration through bringing together federal and non-federal hospital administrators. On behalf of the executives of the federal hospitals, given this 16th day of September, 1952, and it's signed by the executives. Gives me great pleasure.
I just don't quite know what to say because I was flabbergasted when the mayor introduced the president to start with, because Dr. Rourke is to speak. And I couldn't imagine what in the world had happened, and I was going to take the mayor out back after this program was over.
Can't do it now.
Well, I can't now, particularly with the police that he bragged about. I guess I couldn't get away with it. I'm almost speechless. I'm usually not that way, as my associates well know. I just have nothing to say except thank you to all of my friends who did this and to the President for his graciousness in presenting it to me. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, great pleasure for me to be here today This meeting gives me an opportunity to talk on one of my favorite subjects, the health of the American people. Now, when I stood up here a while ago and presented this certificate of merit to Mr. McNamara, he was under the impression that was a cooked-up job, and it was. And I was a party to it. And the mayor and myself maneuvered the situation so the President of the United States would get two introductions instead of one. I was standing up here at the singing of the Star-Spangled Banner, and I noticed I looked all around over the audience, and everybody kept looking at me and wondering why in Sam Hill I wasn't doing a little singing myself. And I'll tell you why. I'm like Artemus Ward. As a singist, I'm not a success. I'm saddest when I sing, and so are those that listen to me. And the singer in the family is now in California, so I feel very close to you people who are here today. In fact, I think perhaps I can qualify as a hospital administrator myself, because the federal government operates the largest group of hospitals in the country. You see, I have some of the same headaches that you do. Just some. I know something about the nature of your problems, and I also know about the wonderful work you're doing. I'm proud of our federal hospitals, and I'm proud that they are members of the American Hospital Association. All our hospitals, voluntary, municipal and state, as well as federal, and all the people who serve them, can take great pride in what they have done to help lift the nation's standard of health in recent years. We now have the highest standard of health in our history. Life expectancy has never been so high. The occurrence of communicable diseases has never been so low. Typhoid fever, smallpox, diphtheria, pellagra, rickets, and malaria have been virtually wiped out. In fact, these diseases are so rare today, I'm told, that many of our younger physicians have never even seen a case. We've overcome the major causes of infant mortality. And today, only one mother in 1,400 dies at childbirth. From 1944 to 1950, the general death rate in our nation declined 10%. Deaths from tuberculosis were reduced 46%. From influenza and pneumonia, 50%. From syphilis, 53%. Contrary to what some of you may have been led to expect, I do not claim sole credit for these remarkable achievements. I'm sometimes accused of claiming credit for everything good that's happened in the United States while I've been president. And by the same token, I'm also accused of never having made a mistake. As for mistakes, I know that I make them like everyone else, and I do admit them from time to time. However, it has not seemed necessary for me to spend a great deal of time calling attention to my mistakes, because there have always been plenty of other people who are willing to do that for me. You hospital administrators know what I mean, because you have to serve as the whipping boys for a lot of other people, too. Actually, our magnificent achievements in the field of health have resulted primarily from teamwork. We could not have made this record unless everyone had done his part. Doctors, nurses, and hospital administrators, and all the other workers who are devoted to keeping people well. We all have our places on the team, and none of us could do the job without the help of all the others. One of the best illustrations of what can be accomplished through teamwork is what has happened in our medical program for veterans. At the end of World War II, we set out on a program to revitalize the medical services of the Veterans Administration and to make sure that men and women who had been disabled in the defense of our country would receive medical care second to none. That program has been successful beyond what everyone thought would be possible. This success has been made possible by the wholehearted cooperation of the private practitioners, professional schools, and hospitals. The Veterans Administration has secured the part-time services of over 100,000 experts in the medical field to aid its full-time staff. And the facilities of nearly every leading medical school in the country are now working with the Veterans Administration to provide an ever higher quality of medical care. I'm delighted it's that way. This unexcelled medical care for our veterans shows how the government and the American medical profession can work together for the benefit of everyone. While we've been making these advances in veterans medicine, we've made equally impressive gains in national defense medicine, in caring for the men and women in the armed services. In the fighting in Korea, the mortality rate among the wounded who reached medical aid is only half the rate of World War II, and that was remarkably low. 85% of the wounded are now returned to active duty. The most amazing thing is that this wonderful record is being made with one half the number of physicians per 1,000 troops that were used in World War II. We've been able to do this only because there has been the closest kind of coordination among our three medical services and civilian health agencies. And while we're speaking of teamwork, I want to pay tribute here to the contribution that you and the medical profession and the Red Cross and the American people have made to the National Blood Program. It has been a magnificent achievement. But let us remember, however, that we dare not relax our efforts. The supply of blood needed for our troops in Korea, for the patients in your hospitals here at home, and for civil defense reserves is dangerously low. I appeal again to every American to give blood if he can. Now, all these evidences of collaboration between the health profession and the government may come as a surprise to you. I'm sure they will be a surprise to most people in view of all that has been said about the terrible things I have been trying to do to the medical profession. The fact is that the medical profession has more to do with determining the policies of the federal government today than ever before in history with regard to health. All the groups concerned with health have come together in the Health Resources Advisory Committee under the chairmanship of Dr. Howard Rusk to give their help and advice to the government. The president-elect of the American Hospital Association is a member of this committee, and a high official of the American Medical Association serves as vice chairman. The committee is doing a marvelous job, and I'm paying tribute to them. All this doesn't mean that there's nothing left to argue about. I expect we'll go right on in the American way, having differences of opinion about the part the federal government should play in helping to meet the health needs of our citizens. Now, personally, I've always understood that the Constitution of the United States imposes upon the government of the United States a responsibility with respect to the general welfare of its citizens. And certainly, no one can pretend that good health is not a matter of first importance so far as the general welfare is concerned. That is why, ever since I've been president, I have recommended programs which I believe will provide better medical health and services for all our people. Some groups have received these proposals enthusiastically. Others have been strongly against them. That's what happens every time we try to move forward. We have to make each advance by overcoming the objections of those who want to pull back. My only interest in this matter is better health for all our people. That is why I've constantly asked the pullbacks to come forward with plans of their own. But you know it's a failing of and common to the pullbacks. They don't want to move ahead at all. No matter how it's done, They just want to stand still with things as they are, or they even want to move backward. Even now, they seem to be advocating the amazing proposition that government should have nothing to do with health except for locally administered indigent medical care programs. That's about like saying, we don't need any form of Social Security except the county poorhouse. These people really want to go back to horse and buggy days. And I'm here to tell you we're just not going back to horse and buggy days. We can't if we wanted to. Fortunately, we've gone ahead in this country, despite the pullbacks, to accomplish what we could over their opposition. I'll tell you a story right here that's most interesting. I have collected, since I've been in the White House, a great many stories about the improvement of that structure and about the various presidents and first ladies who've been in it. There's a story around the White House that Mrs. Millard Fillmore brought the first bathtub to the White House. And there's also a story in connection with it that the local medical association in Cincinnati, Ohio, passed resolutions calling Mrs. Fillmore an indecent person because she had put a bathtub in the White House. This medical association in Cincinnati said that it was unsanitary, that it was unhealthy, that no person should take all his clothes off at one time. Well, my friends, there's been some progress since that date. Now, I want to say to you that there are more bathtubs in the White House now than there are in the Ben Franklin Hotel. As a matter of fact, we have accomplished a great deal, as this story I've just told you illustrates. We've established in 1946 a federal aid program for the construction of hospitals to be owned and operated by the people in local communities. As a result, thousands upon thousands are getting hospital care who never had it before, especially in the rural areas. By now, more than 1,800 projects for hospitals, health centers, and other medical facilities have been approved. Already, this program has added 88,000 beds and about 350 health centers to the nation's health resources. One of the best things about this program is that more than one half these facilities are in towns which never had hospitals before. This is going to help correct the problem of the proper distribution of doctors. Most young physicians will set up their practices in the country if they have modern hospitals in which they can work. This hospital survey and construction program is an example of a happy and successful partnership between the federal government, the state government, governments, and the local community. States take responsibility for orderly planning to meet hospital needs. Local citizens take responsibility for raising about two-thirds of the funds and for operating their hospitals. This is the kind of teamwork by which we were able to meet the needs of 18 million Americans, one in eight of our population, who required hospital care last year. It is an achievement in which Americans can take real pride. I want to remind you that behind all the work of our hospitals, behind all our advances in health, and behind all the health profession can do for the sick, is the underlying force of medical research. The key to all past accomplishments has been in painstaking research brought to the point of practical application. This will be just as true in the future as it has been in the past. We must remember that we advance from one set of problems to another. Past achievements in medicine have advanced us to the problems of the chronic and degenerative diseases. Having extended the lifespan, we are now grappling with heart disease, cancer, and other disabilities that people suffer in later life. These problems are more difficult to resolve than were their predecessors. This means that the research required for their solution is constantly growing more complex and more expensive. It means that the whole structure of medical research must be strengthened. We need more research efforts and more research workers. The American people have given splendid support to medical research through private organizations, and I know they will keep it up. but we have found that the cost of research is so great that we cannot expect it to be met solely through private means. Right now, the federal government is supporting by research grants about a quarter of all the research done in medical schools. The government is giving this aid without any control at all over the science or the schools. That's the way it should be done, and that's the way it must be done. One of the most exciting developments in the history of medical research has been the use of radioisotopes made available by the Atomic Energy Commission. Our scientists tell me that the radioisotope, when used as a tracer, represents the most important tool for unraveling the life process since the invention of the microscope in the 17th century. Our atomic apothecary at Oak Ridge has made about 27,000 shipments of radioisotopes to 922 institutions in the United States. Many of you are now using these materials for the diagnosis of patients with thyroid disease, heart disease, and cancer. Now, it took billions of dollars to produce new aids, these new aids in medicine. Billions of dollars. No one except the government could have marshaled these resources to do the job. One of the research projects of the government, in which I take a great deal of personal pride, is the new Clinical Center of Public Health in Bethesda, Maryland. A little more than a year ago, I spoke at the cornerstone ceremonies for this unique hospital laboratory. We were pleased to have the trustees of the American Hospital Association present on that occasion. In that great structure, soon to be completed, the Public Health Service will combine a range of clinical and scientific skills never before brought together under one roof. This will make it possible to step up our attack on cancer, heart disease, viruses, mental illness, arthritis, and neurological disorders. I honestly believe that our present-day efforts in medical research are leading us into a new golden age of medicine. We should never forget that the best possible of all ways for treating diseases and disability is by preventing them from happening. That is why research and preventive medicine and accident prevention are so important. Just think of all the human suffering that has been prevented and all the money that has been saved by our victories over communicable diseases. Take smallpox, for example. In 1921, we had more than 100,000 cases in this country. Last year, only 11 cases were reported in the entire nation. Good health is not only a matter of wiping out disease, it is a matter of reducing our frightful accident toll. Thousands of men, women, and children are being maimed in accidents each month that we could prevent if we had the foresight to do it. Better safety education, more research into safety devices, plus better enforcement of safety regulations would save us millions of heartaches and hundreds of millions of dollars each year. We could prevent the loss of our productive economy of literally thousands and thousands of people who are now victims of disabling accidents. And we could rehabilitate and return to productive life untold numbers of others at a cost far less than it now takes to take care of them. So although we have come a long way toward our goal of good health for every American, we still have a long way to go. We have to move ahead with a balanced program that takes account of facts as they are. You can't take care of sick people by just putting them in a building. The building is a shell and doesn't become a hospital until it is equipped and staffed. You can't make the best modern medicine available to everybody as it should be unless there is some way for the people to pay for it. The overriding fact is that many phases of modern medical and health care are very expensive. It's not like it was 100 years ago. Let me read you this little item I found in a magazine last week. This is from the Rules and Regulations of Great Falls, New Hampshire Medical Association, 1857. The members of this association shall charge for their professional services the fees in the following table. For a visit in the village, an ordinary medicine, 50 cents. For a visit in the night, $1. For advice in ordinary cases at the office, 25 cents. For extracting a tooth, 25 cents. If more than one tooth is extracted for the same patient at one sitting, each additional tooth shall be 12 and a half cents. If you had two taken out, you'd get them for 37 and a half cents. Now, this is pretty good. For obstetrics, a single birth, $4. For obstetrics, twins, $6. There's no price on triplets, but I guess it would be in the same proportion. For excision of tonsils, $3. Now, it was cheaper to have your tonsils out than just have a baby in those days. But what I'm getting at is that things are different now. The fact that the best medical care costs so much today is not anyone's fault. It is simply because we have found out how to do so much for people who are ill, that if we do all of it, it takes a lot of time and requires a lot of equipment and personnel and many expensive drugs, and it requires the training of physicists, of scientists, and doctors of medicine. Nobody is to blame, but these costs have to be met somehow if we want to reap the blessings of medical research in the relief of human suffering. Our problem is to bring medical and health services to people at a price they can afford to pay. I've invited the cooperation of the medical profession in solving this problem. But it's not a job for the medical profession alone. It's a job for all of us. We are now partially solving this problem for many people through voluntary medical and hospital plans. But for many, many more of our citizens, the problem is not solved. Many tenant farmers and low-income workers and older people do not have the money to obtain health services to an extent even remotely approximating their needs. Over all the land, there are examples such as these. And I say to you, what shall we do about it? This great free enterprise system of ours has made it possible for more Americans to have more things, more of the good things of life, than any people anywhere on earth or anywhere in the history of the world. Can it now also make it possible for every American to protect his health? I would not call such a goal socialism. I would call it a goal of enterprise, American free enterprise. Meeting the health needs of our people is one of the most important ways we can make our American promises come true. It's also one of the mainstays of national defense. Only the strong can survive, and only the healthy can be strong. That is why last December, I appointed a commission on the health needs of this nation. I asked this group of prominent professional leaders and lay citizens to survey the situation and then make positive recommendations for action that would bring our people better health. That commission now has been hard at work for 6 months. It is gathering a lot of highly important facts. It is going to the grassroots of our health problems. It has been holding regular meetings throughout the country and finding out what the health needs of our people are and to what extent they are being supplied. I have not in any way sought to control the work of this commission. I do not know what it will recommend, but I have great confidence in its members, and I'm sure that the report it will file in December will help us move forward toward the thing we all want, better health for everybody in the country. Before we can conquer any obstacle, we must have the will to conquer it. I have a profound faith that the people of this great nation, who have willed so many miracles in modern times, also have an inflexible resolve to conquer our everlasting mortal enemies, disease, an untimely death. We've made great progress toward that goal. We're making progress now. I hope that in the years ahead, we can all march along side by side to take full advantage of our opportunities to make a better and healthier United States of America.